Welcome everybody to Live at the Hive, episode 194, Digital Marketing from the Trenches. I'm Dan Lidelko.
And I'm Stacey DeSantis.
I'm Sachi Thugadaker.
And welcome to Live at the Hive, episode 194. Today, we will be talking about why you should be promoting and advertising in mobile in-app experiences and ecosystems. We're going to throw some hard stats at you about mobile app usage, which I think would not be a surprise to anybody, given how we all use our phones. Yeah, and we've got Sashidi here today, our head of traffic at Honeypot Marketing. So she's going to give us some great tips and ways to optimize. And really the goal here is getting where your customers are when they're not engaged necessarily, when they would be receptive and engaged. So obviously in-app experiences are engaging. You've obviously got to pick and choose the right app and the right set of apps that will provide opportunity. You've got to do your targeting, but it's a massive opportunity that a lot of businesses are not taking advantage of and maybe didn't even know really existed for their purposes, for their uses. So pretty important topic, given that the world is going mobile. You know, we're seeing 60 to 70% of traffic on all of our sites becoming mobile. And so inside of that, mobile app usage dominates mobile phone usage. Right.
Absolutely. Sorry.
Okay. Let's see what we've got going on here today. Hello, Sophia DeSantis. And if you are new to Live at the Hive, or if you're not new to Live at the Hive, please say hi in the comments, like, subscribe, follow, but definitely drop us comments. We love to hear your questions. If you're a lurker, please don't lurk.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. Absolutely.
And also, I forgot what I was going to say, so it doesn't really matter.
We're all good. It's the Friday before a long weekend.
It is the Friday of a long weekend, so thank you for showing up, and hopefully we will have a few people on this live, given that the majority of the world is on, I think, early vacation, since it's nearing the rounding to the end of the day. All right, so as we're getting started here, let's dive right in to what's new. Let's start out with, how about this one? In breaking marketing news, it was all over the place. Google Ads is dropping expanded text ads for responsive search ads in 2022. Sashida, did you see this one coming?
Yeah. I did, yeah. And I think it's a good move because responsive search ads have so many benefits over using the text ads. So basically, responsive search ads allow you to add multiple headlines and descriptions, and Google will then optimize or show your ad to the users depending on the search query, which matches a particular headline. So it's, yeah, definitely a good move by Google. I think, yeah, I did see this coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the, you know, this is like the machine learning, artificial intelligence.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. That you have to, every time I say artificial intelligence, I have to do that. but the machine learning that they have in responsive search ads and the way it can reach through all of the channels is pretty astounding. So not a surprise. My only hope on this one is that, you know, we still have, as long as we still have the tools and the control that we would want for, you know, customizing and also additional testing to supplement the AI. Hello, Yvonne. Welcome, hey, welcome. All right. So, what's up next? Get it together, Nadelko.
It's all good.
So Twitter is soon going to allow users to send and receive Bitcoin in its tip jar platform. So this could be interesting. Again, more ways to monetize, I suppose.
Yeah, more and more people are getting into the Bitcoin game. I think it's just becoming more of a standard thing where I think it was just a, it seemed like a fad for a long time. And now like I even,
dare
I say, dabble in it in a bit. So I think it just makes sense. It's a sign of the times. You know, soon they'll be adding NFTs. I don't know. But yeah, it just makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And again, this is a new way to send and receive money, apparently with lower fees, faster payments. So pretty interesting series of releases from Twitter. Again, you know, they've got the super follow as well for exclusive content. Now, this is probably going to be for bigger creators, but Twitter continues to make those moves across the board.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like every week we're talking about them. They just keep, you know, they're really on a roll right now.
Yeah, they've definitely, they've definitely ramped up the pace at which they are updating and rolling out and rolling back features as well.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Yep. Speaking of which, bye-bye stories on LinkedIn.
Honestly, I think this just makes sense. They were saying, you know, when you're building up your portfolio, and LinkedIn in a lot of ways is like your online resume, do you really just want to have fleeting stories that might not add a lot of value? Or do you want to maybe have a longer form video that kind of really showcase your skills? So it's like, again, one of those things where understanding which features make sense on which social network. And it
just didn't totally make
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we talked about this when it came out. We do talk about this quite often, how LinkedIn is a stickier platform. It's different. It can't be all things to all people. And it really didn't feel like it fit. Now video certainly does fit, and you know, I think one of the cooler innovations that they added was the in-profile video that you can add to, so when people click on your profile image, then you can have a short video there introducing yourself. But yeah, I think this was, the writing was on the wall, and again, kudos for LinkedIn to moving fast, failing fast, breaking things, trying to see what's going on and seeing if it works.
Yeah, like nothing's ever a failure. We're always just testing and learning, and the same goes for LinkedIn, and they gave it a shot, and then they realized, well, actually, it doesn't make sense for us. But, I mean, that doesn't mean that everyone should not pay attention to the features that are available to LinkedIn, because if you want to be seen by recruiters, especially, what better way to show off your social skills than really being able to optimize your LinkedIn profile and showcasing the fact that you do kind of know what's going on.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You want that. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, moving right along to our final what's new, I think this is our final one. This is a great article that Instagram came out with, breaking down how Instagram search works. This is also very, very true of Google, and I'll maybe pull that one up as well. But in this blog post, Adam from Instagram is breaking down how they rank the search results, giving a little bit of background on how you can optimize your profile for their search. You know, the funny thing is, and they, you know, they're laying it out here.
Yeah. You know,
telling you exactly what to do.
I really love this from a content perspective too, because I can't tell you how many like Instagram accounts that you see that are ultra spammy, that are just basically, you know, grabbing imagery or posts from other accounts and then, you know, reposting it onto theirs. And this really talks about how they're going to be almost be policing that and making sure that you're not getting served that kind of content. So I think it's really important for content creators to always understand that you need to be creating original content of your own and not just repurposing content from others.
You know, and I, you know, although he's breaking it down a little bit. Okay. So these are pretty straightforward items, actually, now that I'm really looking at it. Yeah. But he does have a few things in here. If your account's location specific for small business sharing location and bio, these are good tips, especially I think for people. It would be great if they dug in a little bit deeper into, you know, how the search ranks and what they do, kind of similar in a way Google's done it with the Quality Radar guidelines, although those are human guidelines for Google. It does give a lot of insight into how Google works itself as well.
Yeah, very true. Maybe they just don't want to give away their cards yet. Don't make me go into, what is it, Kenny Rogers? You gotta know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Good one. Good job, Stacey. Good job.
I mean, I'm done.
You got a good crowd reaction from that one. And lastly, before we dive into this, what I consider to be a somewhat fascinating topic, and I'll explain why, this here for SEO, you'll see here, this is directly from a Google Search Center, Search Central. There's an SEO starter guide. It's very in-depth. They talk a lot about, they get into really detail, really good detail here. Under the advanced SEO, there we go. Again, lots of really great detail on technically and structurally and what page experience means. Wow. So this is all stuff that Google is actually giving out for free. And it's definitely a resource that if you are in this space, you need to be on top of this and understand this portal.
What a great piece of information. Like, holy, I'm even going to dive into that a little later, I think. Some light reading on a Friday night.
There you go. Light reading on a Friday night. Awesome. All right. So now we are ready to talk about the wonderful, wonderful world of mobile app ecosystems. So just to start out, I think it's important to understand that when app creators have their app and they release it into a store, quite often what they do is they go join publishing networks. AdMob being one of them, which is Google's platform. There are several others that you can, as an app creator. So I write my mobile app. Maybe it's I wrote Waze, the Maps app, right? Or a free VPN or an interior calculator or something like that, like a measuring calculator kind of thing. And those are there so they can monetize their free apps. Yep. And they then accept advertising via that network where people like Sushita, for example, are able to set placements and set various mobile ad types and all of that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Sushita, was there anything else you wanted to add about, you know, mobile apps and app networks?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic because everything that you mentioned, and also because more and more people are spending a lot of time on mobile devices, and most of the conversions nowadays are happening more from mobile devices. So why not, instead of driving them to a website, it will be nice if we can, you know, place these ads on apps that people mostly use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And some of the stats are really staggering if you hear them. I put it in the email today, but it was the average North American adult spends 3 hours and 54 minutes on a mobile device during that day. Of that time, I'm pretty sure it's over 8%, if that's the right stat, is spent in the app ecosystem and not in the browser. So there you go.
Yeah, proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
Proof is in the pudding. So just to run over quickly what it is that we are talking about today, we're going to talk about why mobile app advertising can be used for small businesses really usefully, medium-sized and large businesses, obviously. The distinction between mobile web and mobile apps, to talk about it, talking a little bit about mobile ad platforms and how they'll work. So we're going to touch on the big ones. There are a lot of them out there, but Google, Facebook, Insta, Bing, and AdMob, being another, but from Google Ads, you can access all of those mobile networks. So that's something, if you're not familiar with it, That's something that's important. How we target at in-app how we do in-app and mobile ad targeting. The differences about how tracking works on mobile versus on the web. And then some of the formats that we've used as well and seen success using mobile. Oh my gosh, today it's got to be the end of a long week. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I was picking up what you were putting down. You know,
I'll get there, folks. I'll get there.
Before we get into the really technical piece with it, though, I think one thing that if you're a small business owner and you're listening or watching right now to understand, this is when really understanding who your customer is and when their micro moments might be available to you during their customer journey, where you can really understand which apps you want to advertise in. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a cafe owner, or is going to be a lot different than if I own a pet food store. So understanding what that journey is going to really help you understand which, you know, mobile app network you really want to kind of, or ecosystem rather, that you really want to leverage. So just food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think another thing, so if you are in the services business, so this is a quick tip that we'll throw out there for you. If you're in the services business and you are promoting your business within a service area, one of the best plays that we've done from our playbook is YouTube pre-roll and TrueView ads on specific channels, on how-to channels, how to fix a garage door, how to fix my pool, how to clean my pool. If you're in that type of business, that's a massive micro moment opportunity, right?
1,000%, like not even 100,000%, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. you have to really understand, you know, are you really garage door shopping when everything is fine? No, it's usually when you're at your, you know, 11th hour where it's broken and you can't fix it and you need to, you know, figure out what to do. So understanding that path is really going to help you, not only in the content perspective, which is more my world, but also when it comes to doing the mobile, advertising. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. And I think one of the important things that Sashita will talk about as well is these platforms are not just a slam dunk, throw down an ad and you're going to get something there. It's still the, you know, message match, be relevant. If you're doing YouTube pre-roll, try to be entertaining. Don't just take an ad and throw it up there, okay? So let's talk a little bit, and Sashita, I'll hand this one over to you. So some of the advantages for mobile app advertising for businesses, why they would want to consider it.
Yeah, so firstly, I think as we already discussed, people are spending a lot of time more on their mobile devices. So you want to capture that opportunity as well, and have the perfect placement for your ad. Also, it is very important to know your audience. And once you know them, you know where to exactly place these audience on these particular apps. And there are so many different apps right now. We can leverage all of these, some of these apps, depending on where your target audience would be spending their time on.
Yeah, Nate, I think one of the important things, especially with all the IDFA and privacy, iOS 14, iOS 15, superior data and the ability to target in a much richer way without the use of cookies. And that can just tailor the experience for your user, for your potential user. Okay. Okay, so let's talk a little bit here about the mobile web versus mobile apps. Sashita, you want to run over this? You kind of live this, right? Yeah. Especially on the mobile app side. I know that, over the last year or so, you've been, what percentage of your time would you say is in the mobile side versus?
Nowadays, I think, 40 to 60. So 40% more on like mobile apps. Tracking wise, I think it's very important to understand how to track these different websites and mobile apps to understand your conversion data. So like cookie, like website use cookies, mobile apps use what is called a unique device ID. And we can use these specific IDs directly into your advertising platforms to target certain devices and apps.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Yeah, the ecosystem is completely different than it is on the web, even the mobile web. Right. So if you have two campaigns running, and this is another thing, obviously, like it goes without saying that if you're doing in-app mobile, it's a completely different campaign type, but you should always be segmenting your mobile web, your mobile in-app, and your device, your standard device, laptop, iPad, whatever. Actually, you could bundle mobile and tablet together, but desktop should remain as a separate campaign altogether that you can then gauge the effectiveness. One last thing that's really super important that I know both Sashita and I have worked a lot on is you need that tracking in your full funnel, okay? Don't just throw an ad up with no conversion goal that's inaccurate. You're not going to understand how much ROI you're going to actually get from mobile in-app. And before we go into the platforms, I do want to reinforce one thing. If you're running these types of campaigns, it's really important to understand what's called shared attribution, okay? And what shared attribution is this. Back in the dark, dark days of the web, there was this really stupid thing. It's still around, and I wish it would go away forever because it's dumb. And
I'll tell you really feel.
I spend so much time with clients kind of working on this. It's called last click attribution. Okay. And what that means is the last thing that somebody taps or clicks on gets 100% of the credit for that conversion or that sale. Okay. On average, for most price points, not a t-shirt, but running shoes, the average user has 7 interactions before making a purchasing decision. Okay, no matter what it is, it could be registering for a website. It's a broad statement. Obviously, a car and a home is a lot more. It's very much tied to the value of that thing, right? One's attribution models, and there's several different ones, can be set up in Google Ads, in Facebook, and in Google Analytics as well. The best one that I like personally is called time decay. So Sashita is looking for a new laptop, right? A mid-market price, $1,500 to $2,000, let's call it. Sashita's probably not just going to jump out. I don't know, maybe you would, Sashita, but like you see an ad, you click on it, unless it's something amazing, are you probably going to buy it on your first touch?
No, I would look for like other options as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so Sashita clicks on the ad, she doesn't convert, but then she searches up a review site, mm-hmm. right? Goes through some reviews. Then she goes back to the website to see the tech specs. She does a direct type. Then she Googles maybe more reviews and lands on the review section of the website. Then Sashita makes a decision to purchase. You've got advertising, direct type, and organic search, 3 working together, right? Now, if I was a clever marketer, what I would do is I would have a behavioral trigger set up on my marketing automation platform that knows that Sashita has been here before. Pardon me. And since Sashita has been here before, we know who she is. Maybe she's registered for something that, you know, we've put out, like our newsletter or whatever. And then I might send Sashita an email giving her, you know, I don't know, a free add-on, you know, free mouse and mouse pad or something like that with the laptop to spur the sale. Well, all of those 4 channels have worked in conjunction. All time decay means is that the longer the difference is between the first click and the last click, the first click would get less and less, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. You can do U-shaped as well, which just says, if this happens, I give 20% to each of the 5 channels or 40% to, well, that one would nothing work, 25% of each to the 4 channels that contribute to a conversion. Okay. That's a really important distinction for businesses to understand that is the way to track. Because We actually had a project where we were working on where we significantly decreased the paid spend, and across the board, all of the conversions went down, right? So what that tells us is that paid search, organic, email, and direct typing were all working in conjunction. So the cost per acquisition on last click looked super high. But if you took into account shared attribution, it starts to look a lot more sane, right? Okay. Rant over. All right, let's move along here. Oops. And Sashida. Oh, sorry. There we go. Yeah, do you want to just run over quickly? I think we maybe did this, but is there anything else you wanted to add in terms of mobile ad platforms, like what the capabilities are there?
Yeah, definitely. So again, various platforms, they have different kind of, you know, banner ads, there's interstitial ads, push notifications, all sorts of images or, you know, variations of ads that you can use that can be used to place these ads on the app's placements.
Yep. So. And inside of these platforms, you can also set exclusion lists, right? I don't want Bubble Racer, right? I don't want kids games, right? Because kids will be playing. This is another pitfall of mobile, is you've got to watch certain things. You definitely want a strong exclusion list. And there are lists out there that have, you know, the top 250 most popular kids games, right? You can monitor that manually, but you can start with an exclusion list. You can also have an inclusion and placement list. So you can say, for example, if you are, I'll use garage doors as an example, just because it's an easy one. So anybody that's in renovating, so renovation channels, automotive channels, DIYers, what kind of apps would those people use? Well, probably a more sophisticated calculator, AR type apps that allow people to look at, you know, furniture in certain placements in certain settings, the House app, not House.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. No, House. Yeah. That is right. Yeah. House. But you can go and do your research and identify the top apps and put priority placement and then add bid adjustments so that you show up on those apps, right? So again, you know, I know we talk a lot and Stacey talks a lot about persona development, but you've got to do something with the persona that you develop, right? And this is the doing of it.
And it's a living document, because as you run these campaigns, you're going to learn from them, right? So then you can be like, well, we thought they were really going here, but actually they're really going over here, and you can optimize it accordingly, right? So don't ever look at your persona documents or even your customer journey documents as standalone pieces. They're always going to be evolving.
100%.
I don't get a boom.
Oh. Oh, the crowd enjoys that one. The crowd's enjoying that one. All right, moving right along. Where's my scene here? Sorry, Stacey. I just love bugging you.
He's not going to invite me back.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Google, Sashida. Over to you. I think we're going to talk a little bit about the responsive display ads as well, and also some in-app formats as well here.
Yeah. So what Google Display Ads allows you to do is it helps you place your ads on those different apps. And it has, you know, tie-ups or with all of these apps that you can, that are available in the app stores. So in this way, you can actually decide where, in which particular app you want to place your apps in. Like, for example, if it is a moving storage app, if you own a moving storage business, then you want, maybe want to look at apps that people will be using, like home renovation and so on, at that particular time when they're thinking of moving. So that's a great opportunity that Google allows you to place your apps on.
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember here and to understand just from this particular slide. And we did talk about the retirement of expanded text ads in place of responsive ads. The reason is that a lot of those, so that's why mobile responsive ads can show up on the mobile web, but they also can show up depending on the app and how the app author has written it, that you can, the exact same ads will be able to fit into the mobile ad itself on the in-app. That was so confusing the way I said it. So when here's the way it works with responsive ads, mobile responsive format. You create the basis of the ad. And then Google, if you let it go through the learning phase, Google will say, we're going to put this, we're going to do what's called a run of network. So it's able to create hundreds of ad variations from your source ad itself, where you used to have to create all those versions of those ads. So your ads, when they're in the learning phase, they will show up on mobile web, in app, Gmail, YouTube, and Google's AI. Google's AI will magically figure out the best CTR, the best click-through rate, and the best conversion rate, depending on the target of your campaign. Okay. Let's move right along. Here's a few examples. So you can see here, targeting recommended. So this is just a little view here into what it looks like. So you see there, your ad can appear on a YouTube display network placements and anything else, specific placements that you want as well. And you can see here's an example for the mobile app side. You can see Jigsaw Puzzles for Adults, the Weather Network for iPad, the Weather Channel, and Turbo VPN. This Turbo VPN, by the way, these VPN apps, very, very good for reaching, very, very good for reaching technically minded people.
Yeah. Okay. And not just like older technically minded people. Like, I think my daughter uses that one. So
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a younger audience, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. April's enjoying the sound effects. Thank you, April. We appreciate that.
We appreciate you. Yeah.
I'm trying to use the voice changer sparingly today because I do have I've got hundreds of voices, but anyhow. One other little tip here that I forgot to mention. Here's a targeting tip that can help. So if you're looking for either technically savvy and bleeding edge technical people, or an upscale, upmarket audience, because you can't target incomes anymore. We're not allowed to do that, right? But you can take certain signals, and one of the signals that you can target to on all of these platforms is device type. So if you are looking to hit, now you're gonna make some intelligent guesses here, right? People that are in a higher income bracket are more likely to probably have an iPhone 11, 12, possibly 13 coming out soon. And keep in mind, the iPhone 13 starting price is $2,000 US, okay? And there's going to be an iPhone 13 Max probably. Who knows what the price point's going to be? There's lots of rumors about it. Those are expensive phones, bleeding edge phones. So people in higher income brackets will typically have those. And on the Samsung side, it is the S20 and probably the soon-to-be S30 as well, mm-hmm. Okay? So if you're looking to target a higher income bracket, go for that. And you'll also find technophiles in there, right? The people that just buy the newest phone no matter what. Hello, Andrew, old friend. How are you?
I feel like Andrew would be one of those.
April, we're so glad Andrew's here. All right, let's keep moving.
Cool.
Let's see here.
Do it.
Okay, Sashita, you want to do the Facebook Insta
overview? Yeah. So like I said before, we can actually on Facebook ads target specific devices such as Samsung, iOS, and so on, Android and iOS. And it also allows you to target specific OS versions. So that's really great. So depending on what your target market is, so I think the younger generations would quickly, upgrade their OS or versions earlier. So maybe you can, when you're targeting at the age group between 18 to 24, maybe you want to target like the latest OS versions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And Facebook's got the ability to reach in, as Sashita said, into iOS apps. And you can also do a ton of things with that. Andrew's saying, I love the sound effects.
Thanks so much, Andrew. That's, I work hard on searching these things up with my virtual soundboard. By the way, this is
A little app called VoiceMod. It's typically used for live streamers. So I thought we'd add it just for a bit of fun.
I'm getting that.
Okay. Yeah. So here's a few hot takes here. We get this a lot. We say Bing, people laugh. They say there's no activity on Bing, but you got to understand that Bing Ads is more than the Bing search engine. It is all of Microsoft's advertising network, which includes Windows 10, which includes LinkedIn, and they also have a sizable display network. So Bing can be a really good option because, again, I think the things that people are thinking about here are that, and you know, this is an important distinction. A lot of people out there in the world think that Google search ads are the only thing. And to be honest with you, Google search ads are becoming less and less relevant as time goes on in terms of their effectiveness.
I think too, like overall, it just makes sense to diversify. You don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of success with Bing.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you don't have a lot of budget for your campaigns, I would definitely recommend Bing because, yes, the cost per click on Bing is much more less than Google Ads for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's talk ad mob.
Going into the mob.
Okay, so ad mob is actually Google's publisher network. So if I authored a game, I actually read a case study on ad mob yesterday about this guy just developed a better free slot machine, right? So people love slots, but he did stuff like nudging. You could shake your phone a bit to affect the outcome. And he's generating over $1,000 USD a day in AdMob ad revenue. So, you know, that's the publisher side. You access AdMob from the Google Ads interface, right? And that's the network that you're reaching into on Google's side of things. April's throwing down some knowledge. Don't rule Bing out in any of your paid strategy. Bing is a great platform. And that's a good term that I like is it's a platform and it's not a search engine anymore. Like these things have gone way, 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 way beyond all of that because of artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Word.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about in-app targeting. Shashida?
Yeah, for sure. As discussed before, we want to move towards our first party data and not rely on the third party data as much. And in-app targeting allows you to do, collect first party data and also advertise to first party audience. So that's great. Depending on like device ID, GPS tracking, and there's so much you can do in terms of tracking because mm-hmm. your app, basically when you're on your app, it captures so much of your user data, like your GPS and your locations and so on. Everything is getting tracked within mm-hmm. that app when you're using mm-hmm. it.
And like I said, it's cookie-less.
Yeah, so. And talk about how cool that would be if, I don't know, you were trying to sell something to do with home repair and you geo-targeted in and around your local Lowe's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think there's just so many different ways you can slice and dice this. I think it's just actually just getting in there and, testing what works best, because I think that maybe people don't understand how powerful this actually is. And you could, make sure that you've got your right, age group, people that are looking to do home repairs, targeted around Lowe's.
Mm-hmm.
They're already looking to purchase.
I couldn't
agree more. Very insightful.
Okay, let's go. Actually, my rant before was impartially intended. I thought we started early and we were moving too fast. And I see it's already 5:01.
Boom.
Chatty Cathy's this group. Let's skip on over to in-app ad formats and talk a little bit about what your options are there. So again, Sushita, I'll kick the soccer ball back your way.
Yeah. So I think interstitial rewarded, there are different types of ads that formats that you can use depending on where you want to show your ads on or what your product is. So I would definitely, you know, depending if you want to show your actual product and how it works, then I would choose like the pre-roll ads. So that gives you in-depth information about that product.
Yeah. And okay, here's a tip for pre-roll, because we've done this several times over the years. In fact, we had such a good pre-roll ad one time. This was one of my favorite cases a few years ago. We created a what was effectively a native 30-second video. So it was very little. It really wasn't pushing anything. And we were using it for audience building. We had a 99% 100% view rate. So 99% of the people watched the entire pre-roll. And what we did was, it was about science and education. And we created a 30-second, basically like a small, what you would do like with a reel or a TikTok, that was just really entertaining, because we wanted to get those people into our audiences so we could remarket the rest of the content for them. And the important thing here is, for your pre-roll videos, don't just use a commercial. Stop it. People aren't watching TV. Okay, you got to hook them within the first 3 seconds, because that's the non-skippable 4 seconds, depending. If you can hook them in that first 3 seconds, so do not have a 4 second, 5 second stinger, right? Yeah. With a spinning logo animation. Just get right into it, just like people do on TikTok. Start with, if you're talking to somebody, another great thing is, start the sentence with, you need to know this now, and then the benefit to the user. Right away, you'll get a hook. So there's a couple of hooks there, a couple of tips there for pre-roll video advertising to be effective. Cool. Okay. Oh, damn it. I missed it. That's okay.
And if you missed our episode last week, we talked all about that. So
we sure did. We sure did. Okay.
Is going on here.
The one other thing I was going to mention, and I don't think it got in here, and that's okay, is because we're about to wrap it up. Another thing you can do with mobile in-app advertising is playable ads. And what I mean by that is, you can develop a small video game, you can develop a mortgage calculator, you could develop a, like, all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And that mobile ad can be very interactive. And if you do a good job, then what will end up happening is, you get that full interaction from that user, and potentially, you know, a click through right into your own experience from there.
Great advice. Yeah.
So April is saying, a good example are the Dr. Squatch ads. I don't know what that is. Am I aged? Anyone know what Dr. Squatch is? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I have no idea. But I trust April's taste. So
I think it was Andrew.
Oh,
that was Andrew that said that.
Oh, it was Andrew. Oh, well, we see.
All right. Well, you got to give us some context there, Andrew, because I'm not sure what Dr. Squatch is. Oh, they're quick to the point and interesting. Okay. Yeah, ads that don't act like ads are the best ads. I like TikTok's tagline, and I'm not fanboying or simping on TikTok at all. But I do like the tagline, don't make ads, make TikToks, because that's true.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. The best ads are native, period. End of story. Oh. Andrew's saying it's Manly Organic soaps and stuff. Got it. Okay. Groovy. All right, everybody. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Live at the Hive. And hopefully you've come away from this episode with a bit of a deeper understanding and appreciation for the massive size of the mobile ecosystem. It's only growing. It's not going to get any smaller. You know, web browsers aren't actually web browsers anymore. They're entire operating systems and platforms. Chrome is an operating system now. So I think getting out of the head, out of the mindset that, you know, we're doing stuff in a browser we're doing stuff on mobile devices and with mobile applications. Just as an example, a significant number of Google's DAOs or daily active users actually use the Google app. Google has its own app. It's got Google Discover on it, which is kind of the feed that comes up beneath it. Most Android phones, all Pixels have that as the default Google app. Most Samsungs have it as well. Apple will never have that, but no. That's okay. But, you know, opening your mind into getting your business in front of your customers, fishing where the fish are, going where your customers are going, taking an omni-channel approach, so being several places, taking micro moments into account, and lastly, please fix your attribution model. Don't use last click anymore. I want to do a whole live just ranting about that.
Oh boy. I'll trap myself in for that one.
And also, just one more time to round up today's episode, artificial intelligence and machine learning. Dun, dun, dun. That has to happen every time.
Every time.
Okay. All right. Well, it is a long weekend. Happy Labor Day, everybody. I've now completely knocked this out of being an evergreen video, but we can clip that at the end. Enjoy your weekend. Have a safe one. We'll see you back here next week for episode 195. We're getting close to 200. I'm going to have some special effects. Maybe I'll try a confetti thing. I don't know.
Like play, it's the final countdown.
That's a 30-year-old song.
I know, but it never gets old.
1990 was 31 years ago. Just think about that.
My God. Yeah. I don't want to.
I know. All right, everybody. Have a great long weekend. Enjoy yourself. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll see you next week. Same B time, same B channel.
Bye.
Peace.